my line when I'm reading this book is that, you know, my first novel called Go Now was about a burnout junkie womanizer driving across the U.S. And I realized after I wrote that book, because everybody thought I was just talking about myself, that I will write a book as different as possible so people can't think I'm talking about myself. So this book is about young gay poets who do acid. But I know everybody's going to think I'm talking about myself. Yeah. Oh, anyway, I tried. This part I'm reading here is it's about this old guy in his late 20s named David. I haven't really settled on any of the names. I have a long list of names to consider to use, but when I just thought of like a good name for the guy who I'm calling T. I'm thinking I might call him Percival. but anyway, like the two main characters are David, who's the guy who actually, as an older man, is writing this book, recalling his youth as a poet. And when he's in his like late 20s in New York in the early 70s, mm-hmm. Having this intense affair with a teenage poet who I only am calling T so far. So that's what I'm going to read. It's about David and T. And David is the older one and T is the younger one. So here's this chapter. David wove his way through the morning streets, zones and channels of air and pedestriana back towards T's hotel. He could taste the tacky way his mouth stank, and there was a bad scraped and itchy feeling in his butt for not having bathed. He licked his lips. Then he did it again in an exaggerated way, like an insane person, just to separate himself from the streaming citizens. Jesus, he was impressionable, but he was happy to be influenced by his new leading man. He could get into it. He felt a little dizzy and thirsty. He stepped into a deli and bought a big can of beer, two of them, one for tea. He went and sat on a bench in Washington Square Park to revive himself with his beer and a cigarette. The cow is a tree in my buttocks. I don't know what that's doing there. The dirty concrete path was too pretty, embarrassingly so. He remembered an Edwin Denby poem he'd memorized once. The sidewalk cracks, gum spots, the water, the bits of refuse, they reach out and bloom under arc light, neon light. Luck has uncovered this bloom as a byproduce, having flowered too out behind the frightful stars of night. And these cerise and lilac-strewn fancies open to bums who lie poisoned in vast delivery portals. These pictures sat on by the cats that watch the slums are a bouquet luck has dropped here, suitable to mortals. So, honey, it's lucky how we keep throwing away. Honey, it's lucky how it's no use anyway. Oh, honey, it's lucky how no one knows the way. Listen, chum, if there's that much luck, then it don't pay. The echoes of a voice in the dark of a street roar when the pumping heart bop stops for a beat. It was about nighttime, but still, byproduce and the quiet, the defenselessness of it, titled The Silence at Night, renewing rhymes, itself an example of its subject, flowered too out behind the frightful, it cried for music. A stringy-haired guy in dirty, rumpled clothes and wearing a backpack going by looked David in the eye and muttered something under his breath, and David double-took when he was 5 feet past. Spontaneously inspired, David coughed out a sharp undertone, "Hey!" The guy slowed up a little bit, and David realized he was supposed to get up and walk with him, so he did, yanking along his beers, tearing the bag. He asked, "Acid?" "Window pane." "How much is it?" "$3 a hit." "I'll take three." They dropped down onto a bench, and David dug a wadded $10 bill from his pants pocket in exchange for three tiny, transparent drug sliver plaques, like doll fingernails, and a $1 into which he folded them. Have a nice day. The dealer smiled annoyingly before sliding down the bench a little and getting up and walking off. A couple of cops were swaggering intrusively down the path, and David's heart shuddered, but they passed on by, one glancing at him a little contemptuously. There was all this gurgling and ooing of pigeons coming from the grass behind him. He tuned to it and swelled like a warm overflow, a nice sound like a mother's voice or the happy baby, like sex, something you would set up housekeeping in. He carefully, surreptitiously slid the bill pack, little green origami envelope, out of his pocket, unfolded it, and looked at the clear, square punch clips on it. They didn't seem to have defined edges, and looking at them had a weird effect on the inside of his mouth, like a conditioned reaction, as if he'd tasted something sour. It triggered a release of saliva and gave his body a surprised, spacey feeling, like that moment of an injury before anything actually hurt. There was the start of a hard-on in there, too. He anticipated shivering, just from looking at those little square acid flecks. He put the drugs back away and popped the top and took a big gulp from his imposing green and bronze 16-ounce Ballantine ale. That was comforting, improving. Acid in his pocket. It made him feel like he'd just come into an inheritance. He drank some more beer and smiled a little. He remembered something T'd been going on about. Emotions. They're all nonsense, he'd said. People make such a big deal about them, congratulating themselves, acting as if there's something profound, worthy about them. How pathetic. What are they? Biological reflexes, like sex. You hate and fear threats to your well-being, get angry at disturbances, love, nourishment, pleasure, relief. What's all the sloppy big deal about them? Pathetic human self-congratulation, overweening foolishness. Jesus Christ, how poor do you have to be to want credit for your fucking emotions? There's no value to them, apart from their biological functions of self-preservation and protection. They're not goddamn standards of meaning, proofs of worth, fucking hippies. And it's so funny the way they're exploited by the advertisers, manipulated by cheap so-called artists, politicians, and con men of all types. T would flout them. T would defy the tyranny of feelings and their sad and moronic partisans. Silly boy, thought David, but right away he knew it was a defensive gesture, that the silly boy could fuck him up good. Despite all the condescension he could muster, be the kid's big ideas and idealistic anti-idealism. He drank some more beer. It was reviving. He had an urge to pop one of those acid flecks in his mouth right now. Yes, no, yes, no, no. Burble, google, gurgle. He had a moment of fear, remembering his wife, took another long slug of beer, thinking of tea in the hotel room, and then that the room was expensive, and tea wasn't going to be having any money. Maybe he could just get him a cheap apartment in the East Village. It's David, he called through the door. He was holding some yellow freesias he'd bought on the way up. What? I'm sleeping. I know, just let me in. And in a few seconds, the door opened. I'm tired, too, really. Sleepy, too. David walked inside. I couldn't stay at the house. I just got a crash. Go on back to bed. All right. David joined T in bed by the blue-starred book and listened to him fall back asleep, and then a few minutes later fell asleep himself. They woke up late in the day and took the acid. The idol of the cheap hotel room, pencil and paper pad, donuts, streaky window, sex. Fear of looking in eyes, and then they sadden. Cheap portable typewriter and the burnt, charred, purple-looking letters of the alphabet, it smacked into the white, fibrous paper. You could almost smell them, the words. They smelled like burning teeth, the fumes from dentist's drilling, rich and hot and deathly innocent. There should be a log in something looking so pretty, because it was a crime the way they promised so much. No, 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 it's fine. David and T stopped talking because it complicated and confused things too much. They gestured and wrote notes and laughed, too, uncontrollably. Laughing looked grotesque on T, so unnatural. Then a word escaped and started everything again. T was furious, and they both cried, trying not to make too much noise, which effort just doubled the fear. T had a Robert Crumb comic book through the air shaft far away. A radio was playing Just My Imagination by The Temptations. The trick was to remember you could change directions. Gradually the mouth got very big, like popular. The senses, the means of perception, they were plenty after all. Who needs X-ray vision? Sense of room as a compartment in the all, the local mercifully sealed off from the endless, a shelter from it, but full of leaks and seepages, like tendrils, soft voices, smells, and people themselves, one oneself, similarly a kind of shelter, a reduction interpretation of the activities, the expressions of energy. In that sense, life, as usually thought of, was negative, a reduction, a blind little fungus parasite on boundless and by that token meaningless reality. Life to the extent that it individuated itself, that it conceived of itself as separate from reality, the dead. The trails that everything leaves, eyes in action, nerves, brain, or is it everything's leave? What? Wait, I'm confused. You can trace back to my brain and thence to penis, which evacuates liquid waste and is the down there with this intestinal exit for solid waste. Where does the time go? It goes into airless places, taking your breath for its scuba gear. No, 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 take a look. I is a projector. I wrote the code. A touch, merge, mouth to nipple, etc. Wouldn't it be booful if we could just run together into one great big blob that your goosey flesh feeds you, smells, views, eroticism, etc. I is a projector, lost powers of speech. Everything but everything was sex, mental hurt, and it was hard to take. Which did you want to keep, this or the rest? Now you may cry. Metallic taste. But Christ, the thrill of being with this boy with whom he could do anything, and the boy not only allowed it, whether or not the boy would go along with it, but was smart and similar enough so that David knew he was understood. It was love, the stuff of love, as petty as that may be. I hate words, but there's no substitute. They're my life. They're my wife. I fuck myself. Oh, Christ, don't think wife. Oh, shit. T's head is streaming like a horse, those nostrils, the red and pink where they cup against his face. David's eyes won't stop that surprised watering. T's shoulder blades were deer hooves. Your lips are indeed a disaster of alienated star knots. The taste of his unwashed, uncut dick as David sucked it, and T listened to the Velvet Underground on headphones stuck in a cheap portable cassette player he'd borrowed from the desk clerk. David was his appliance, too, and got into it like a baby curled up sucking for his own pleasure, but subordinate to him who hardly noticed, as if it practically wasn't a person to him, but purely a tool. David almost lost his mind. It made him so happy. Still, and the chains went on, linking in either direction, and the taste, and his own cock rousing, to put it mildly, from its muddle of crotch smell as he did it, stars in his eyes, skin moistening with the opening out, every hole, pore, a socket, as nature abhors a vacuum. He almost shit his pants, jerked himself off while he sucked the cock. And talk about fireworks, hypnagogic visions, the moisture at every turn, shivers. T would also go so soft and sweet on him, like the dawns he liked so much. That dawn they lay side by side, describing the limping fawns and children fading from where they'd crept and sauntered forth with the new light in their minds in the small hotel room. Maybe LSD is our compensation for these grotesque brains, he said.